Jordan, so near banks I stand, and cast a wishful eye.
Hi, this is Jay Webb of International Gospel Hour. Since 1934, Churches of Christ have proclaimed God's Word through International Gospel Hour. Please stay tuned for another lesson on this program by Jody Apple. Are you listening?
For the promised land.
Thank you for tuning in to IGH 260, a one chapter per week, 260 week, 5-year long study of the New Testament. Today's broadcast, lesson number 1 of week number 33, studying Mark chapter 5. As we begin today's study, these reminders. For all of our free materials, click the word free at internationalgospelhour.com. At that page, you will find links to audio and video files, print materials, ebooks, Bible reading schedules, links to all of these IGH 260 broadcasts, links to our Bible study courses, and much more. For text updates, text IGHFREE, all one word, to this number, 55222. Text IGHFREE, all one word, to 55222. To study the Bible online, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org to get started, or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. You can also find that series featured at our Facebook page, facebook.com/International Gospel Hour. These online courses are self-paced. Go as fast or as slow as you need to. And, like everything at International Gospel Hour, they are available to you absolutely free. Visit igh.worldbibleschool.org or follow the links at internationalgospelhour.com. To study the Bible by mail, call this toll-free number, 1-855-IGH-6988, to receive a free 30-lesson series, or use the contact form at internationalgospelhour.com to request that series. Here are 10 free resources that you might want to check out at our free page. First, John William McGarvey's sermon on baptism. More than 30,000 people have already seen that lesson online at our Facebook pages. Second, the 6-lesson audio series, The Beatitudes, The First Thing That Jesus Taught. Third, the ebook, Receiving the Gift of Salvation. This book teaches not only that God gives us salvation, but it also teaches us just how and why God does so. Fourth, the ebook, Surrendering to His Lordship, a book that focuses on Christ's supreme authority. Fifth, the ebook, Victory in Jesus, in times of hopelessness, the earnest expectation of spiritual victory through Jesus keeps us going. Sixth, at the free page, you will find links to all of our online courses. Seventh, a 6-lesson audio series, The Big Questions. It studies big questions about God, the Bible, Christ, faith, redemption, and the Christian life. Eighth, the video class, Spiritual People Worship God. Ninth, our daily Bible reading schedules. And then finally, 10th, a 6-lesson online video series, Christ Obeyed, What About Me? Invest some serious Bible study time and watch this series. Sometimes we think something like this, I don't have to do anything to be saved. Jesus, after all, did it all. Yes, that's true. It's impossible for us to do anything that earns our salvation. But that does not mean that we do not have to lovingly, willfully, completely, faithfully, and joyfully surrender to Jesus as Lord. Hebrews chapter 5, verse 9 teaches that Christ became the author of eternal salvation to all who obey Him. Obey Him? That sounds like legalism to me, a works-oriented salvation. Really? If that's what you think, then you owe it to yourself to invest time to study this series. It emphasizes our need to surrender to Jesus, but it never pushes a human merit or works-oriented salvation. To learn more, check out that series. All of the slides used during the course of the series are also available for free download. Again, all of these resources are available 24/7 at our free page. Just go to internationalgospelhour.com/free and follow the links. And finally, before we get started, join the thousands who keep up with International Gospel Hour and visit facebook.com/International Gospel Hour and twitter.com/Jody Apple. Let's start our study of the fifth chapter of Mark's Gospel. Here are the two ways that we often summarize each new chapter of the Gospel records. First, we usually start by summarizing the key words that we find within each chapter. And then second, we summarize, that is, we outline, the key thoughts presented in each chapter. The first summary will give us an idea of some of the general teaching that we will encounter as we read, as we think, and as we study our way through the text. The second summary will provide more detail than our brief word studies, but nowhere near what we will find as we engage in a verse-by-verse, thought-by-thought study of Mark chapter 5. We begin that verse-by-verse, thought-by-thought study after we conclude these two summaries. Here's what we can learn from the key word studies of Mark chapter 5. Of the 699 total words appearing in the 43 verses of the original text of Mark 5, 219 of them are unique terms. The top three terms are those translated as the, who, which, 99 times, and also, even, and yet, or but, 84 times, and he, she, it, self, same, or they, when plural, 54 times. These three terms by themselves account for 237 occurrences of the 699 total words in Mark 5. That's just over 33% of all of the words in the chapter. These three terms are, respectively, an article, the words the, who, and which, a coordinating conjunction, that is, a connecting term, the words translated as and, also, even, and yet, or but, and then finally, the third, a pronoun, a term standing in the place of a noun. That's the words he, she, it, self, same, and they. As we have observed many times before, these three original terms are very common throughout the biblical text. That's why the three of them together are found just over 33% of the time in Mark chapter 5. We have noted this before, but words like this are the glue that hold clauses and sentences and context and thoughts and narratives together. The fourth most frequently occurring term in Mark chapter 5, the term translated as to say, speak, or tell. It appears 18 times in the chapter. We have not taken the time to do so in the past, so let's quickly survey the major meanings of this term. Bauer notes the following four major definitions. As you might imagine, for a term that appears 3,045 times in all of its terms throughout the Second Covenant, there are multiple nuanced sub-definitions that come into play as well. We will, for the sake of time and clarity, center only on the four major meaning. First, it means to express oneself, orally or in written form, utter in words, say, tell, give expression to. The term usually appears in context with some indication of what it was that was said. Second, to express oneself in a specific way, say. In this regard, it appears when asking, adhering, ordering, assuring or asserting, declaring or writing. Third, it means to inform about, tell of something, speak, report. And then finally, fourth, It means to identify in a specific manner, call, or name. In the gospel records, the term appears as follows. In Matthew, 568 times. In Mark, 338 times. In Luke, 610 times. And in John's gospel, 533 times. We might think that this term occurs fewer times in Mark's narrative for at least two reasons. First, Matthew, Luke, and John are longer than Mark's gospel. And then second, Mark's gospel appears to be more action-oriented than dialogue-centered. That sounds reasonable enough. But when we consider the percentage of its use compared to the total terms in each narrative, Mark, though still in last place numerically and in percentage points as well, it only lags behind Matthew by 29.87 hits per 1,000 words compared to 30.93 hits per 1,000 words. The point, that's not a major difference. Mark uses the term almost as frequently as the other accounts. Let's take a quick look at how the 18 appearances of the term are used in Mark chapter 5. In Mark 5:7, the demon-possessed man spoke to Jesus. That's reflected in the word said in that context. The mechanics of the demon-possessed man speaking are not explained. What do we mean by that? On the surface, it appears that a physical man physically spoke audible words to Jesus. But though the physical voice and the actual words came from within that man, the text indicates that it was the demon within that was speaking. One issue worthy of further study, obviously, was how unclean spirits or demons possessed, that is, controlled, the bodies of those whom they occupied. In Mark chapter 5, verse 8, Jesus spoke. Interestingly, if you are standing in the presence of Jesus and the demon-possessed man, it would appear that the man first spoke to Jesus and then that Jesus spoke to him. But as we have just noted, it was the unclean spirit within the man that spoke to Jesus in Mark chapter 5, verse 7. And in reply, Jesus spoke not to the physical outward man himself, but rather to the unclean spirit within that man. That's reflected in the words, "Come out of the man, unclean spirit." In Mark chapter 5, verse 9, the demon spoke again, saying, "My name is Legion, for we are many." This time the words for saying and name appear as singular, and yet the name Legion and the word many reflect more than one. Just three verses later, in Mark 5:12, the demons, note the plural use of the term, they spoke to Jesus, saying, there's our word, saying, "Send us to the swine, that we may enter them." Again, note the plural terms, us and we. It was the demons, plural, that spoke to Jesus. In 5:19, Jesus spoke to the demon-possessed man after the unclean spirits were cast out of him. In 5:23, Jairus spoke to Jesus. The woman with the issue of blood thought, and thus she said to herself, "If only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well." Mark 5:28. Jesus and the disciples spoke back and forth to each other in Mark 5:30 and Mark 5:31, with two of the three speaking terms used with reference to the disciples speaking. Jesus and the woman with the issue of blood spoke to each other in 5:33 and 5:34. And then finally, starting in Mark 5:35 and then continuing through the end of the chapter, each use of this term appears in the context of the healing of Jairus' daughter. Nothing unusual to report in that regard. The preposition translated as into, to, or for appears 14 times in Mark 5. It was usually used in the chapter to reflect a sense of direction, to the other side, to the country, into the sea, into the boat, or to the house, and so forth. It also indicates physical location or place, in the city, in the country, in the house. Occasionally, it referred not to physical direction or physical place, but to a spiritual place. Jesus told the woman healed of the issue of blood, "Go in peace." Perhaps the most unusual occurrence of this term appears in Mark 5:12, where the demons begged Jesus and said, "Send us to the swine, that we may enter them." Other frequently occurring terms worth at least passing mention. The term translated as "you" or "you people" appears 12 times in this chapter. It was usually used as Jesus was speaking to others. The word translated as "to be" or "exist" appears 11 times in the chapter. It was a significant term that represents the way things really were in the existing world of that day. We have looked at this term many times before. The term translated as "to come" or "go" appears 10 times in the chapter. It's a term that, like the prepositions noted earlier, often, but not always, reflects the movement of Jesus and his disciples to and from cities and villages around the Sea of Galilee. Though the movement of Jesus and the disciples was central, the comings and goings of others are also mentioned in the text. The word translated as "much," "many," or "more" appears 9 times in Mark 5. This word, often used to describe the size of the multitude, as in the words "great multitude," was also used in the chapter to identify the number of demons in the demon-possessed man. The passionate plea of Jairus, he begged Jesus earnestly, the number of doctors the woman with the issue of blood consulted, the noise of the crowd who wailed loudly at Jairus' home, and Jesus strictly commanding that no one should spread the word about the resurrection of Jairus' daughter. The word translated as "Jesus," referring, of course, to Jesus the Christ, appears 8 times in the chapter. There are many sign words that indicate or that identify speakers and purposes and or conflicts within the chapter. They include the words translated as "I" or "we," appearing 7 times in the chapter. The question word "who," "what," "why," appearing 7 times in the chapter. The term translated as "that," "in order that," or "so that," that shows purpose, 6 times in the chapter. The word translated as "but," "and," or "now," appears 5 times in Mark 5. Usually a connecting term, but it often introduces a point of contrast. The word translated as "immediately," "next," or "suddenly," Mark's action term, it appears 5 times. We have not taken much time to emphasize this term before, but the word rendered as "to see," "view," "perceive" shows up 5 times in the chapter. It was used all 5 times with reference to physical identification by sight of someone or of some event. Like many other terms that we have looked at in our previous studies, this one reflects the nature of a God-created world subject to our physical senses and thus subject to our understanding. The term for multitude or crowd occurs 5 times. The term that we often associate with the work of the Comforter, the Holy Spirit, appears 5 times in Mark 5. All 5 times, however, it was used in the sense of begging or pleading. See, for example, Mark 5, verse 10, verse 12, verse 17, verse 18, and verse 23. The term translated as "every" or "whole" appears 5 times in Mark 5. We see it in Mark chapter 5, verse 5, translated as "always." The demon-possessed man was always crying out. It was translated as "all" or "everyone" in chapter 5, verse 20. "All" or "everyone" marveled. It was translated as "all" in chapter 5, verse 26. "The woman spent all that she had." It was translated as "whole," chapter 5, verse 33. "The woman told Jesus the whole truth." And it was translated as "all" again in chapter 5, verse 40, where Jesus put them all outside of Jairus' home. The term translated as "ruler of the synagogue" 4 times in Mark chapter 5. The word translated as "see" 4 times. The word translated as "child" 4 times. And finally, the term translated as "swine" 4 times in Mark chapter 5. We say this, or something like it, every time that we end our overview of the most frequently occurring terms in a chapter. Remember 2 things: the importance of studying words as they appear in a given context, and the limitation of studying words as they appear in a given context. We cannot, by studying words in isolation, that is, by themselves, fully learn their meaning and their import, and, without any further effort, know everything that can be known about a given context, let alone know everything about that word in that given context. We can, though, study those words in an integrative way, words as they are connected, and thus as they relate to other words, and, in doing so, gain a healthy understanding of their meaning and their intent in a given passage. To some extent, a very limited extent, we have not just looked here at gloss definitions of words by themselves. Though we have not looked at every lexical tool possible and studied everything that could be studied about a given word's meaning, we have provided some perspective about how the words we mentioned were used in Mark chapter 5. Note the use of the word some. Some perspective. That's definitely a limited point of view. But as we continue to do this from chapter to chapter, we see a pattern emerging of how certain words are used across Mark, across the Gospels, and across the New Testament. Just remember that our key word studies are only, emphasis on the word only, they are only a part of how we read, how we study, and how we learn from God's revelation. And one final thought. When there are, as in Mark 5, 219 unique terms appearing throughout the chapter, there are other limitations to our overview. First, we are definitely not studying all 219 terms as they appear in context. Second, the words we usually tackle appear near the top of the most frequently occurring word lists, which means third, that there are a lot more words that are not at the top of that list. And finally, fourth, it would be foolish to think that all of the words that appear less frequently in a given context are thereby relegated to the rubbish heap of word studies. That's just not so. We stop, for example, at words that appear four or more times in Mark 5. That means that we did not look at, or even mention, words that appear three times or fewer. It's tempting to think that, well, if a word only appears three times or fewer in Mark 5, then it must be a really insignificant word. Just a little more study should dissuade us from that line of thinking. The term for demon-possessed, which we alluded to many times in our study, yet without calling attention to the actual words used in the context, that is, translated as demon-possessed, that term appears only three times in the chapter. An insignificant word? Not at all. Or what about the term translated as name, as in what the demon called himself? That term also appears three times in Mark 5. We could illustrate the obvious limitations of this study by noting other terms of equal importance, conceptually and contextually in Mark 5, that just do not happen to appear as many times in the text. But hopefully you get the point. Words, when used together with other words, are the building blocks of language, of thought, and of ideas. We hope that our study of some of them as we go from chapter to chapter will prove helpful to you. Let's prepare for our brief outline of Mark chapter 5. Mark, like all of the gospel narratives, records numerous miracles wrought by the hands, the words, and the power of Jesus. This chapter records three of those miracles. First, the opening segment of the chapter chronicles Jesus' healing of a man possessed by a demon, an unclean spirit. Second, the middle section of the chapter documents the resurrection of Jairus' daughter. And then finally, third, literally taking place in the middle of the account of the healing of the resurrection of Jairus' daughter, we witness a third miracle. Jesus healed a woman with a long-standing flow or issue of blood. Let's start our overview and outline of Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5, verses 1 through 20, Jesus in the country of the Gadarenes, the man with the unclean spirit. In the first five verses of Mark 5, Jesus meets the man with an unclean spirit. Verse 1, Jesus and his disciples traveled to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. They came to the country of the Gadarenes. Verse 2, as Jesus left the boat, he was met by a man with an unclean spirit. This man came out from the tombs. Verse 3, because he lived in the tombs. It was impossible to restrain him, even with chains. Verse 4, though he had often been restrained with shackles and chains in the past, he was able to pull them apart and break them into pieces. No one had the ability to control him. Verse 5, on an ongoing basis, through the night and through the day, he lived in the mountains and in the tombs, constantly crying out and cutting himself with stones. In Mark 5, verses 6 and 7, the man with the unclean spirit saw Jesus. In verse 6, when the man with the unclean spirit saw Jesus from a distance, he ran to Jesus and he worshiped Jesus. Verse 7, and he cried out with a loud voice and said, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God that you do not torment me." These reminders as we close. To start our free, self-paced online Bible study, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com.
God be with you till we meet again.
Thank you for listening to our broadcast today. We hope, first, that it glorified God, but second, we hope that it edified you. Listen to it again if you need to, or to other lessons in the series by going to the Media tab at our site at internationalgospelhour.com.
God be with you.